7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line. Good morning, Met fans, and happy 2 for Tuesday to you all. How you all doing? Well, there was potential signs. Well, there's always potential for a letdown after a big, big series like the Mets had against the Braves. That was one for the ages, winning 4 out of 5 for the Bravos and actually putting the Braves in their place for now. But it was very, very encouraging. And you just don't want to let down after a big series like that. Well, the Mets showed no signs of a potential letdown their series opener against the Cincinnati Reds yesterday, beating them by a score of 5-1 Monday night at God's Country, Citi Field. As they have done all season, especially at home, the Mets scored in the first inning, this time on a Starling Marte 2-run home run off former Met prospect Justin Dunn. Remember Justin? Before Dunn could record an out. They got to Dunn again in the third inning when Francisco Lindor walked, then stole second base. With 2 outs and Lindor still at second, Daniel Vogelbach came through, as he has many times in his short career as a Met, with an RBI single that gave New York a 3-0 lead. The Reds got that run back in the fourth inning, but Chris Bassitt pitched around some trouble on the base paths to limit the damage. Bassitt continued to maneuver in and out of trouble in the later innings, getting a double play to end the fifth and a pop out with the bases loaded to end the sixth. With the tying run at the plate in the eighth inning, Bassitt struck out Aristides Aquino on his 114 pitches for Chris Bassitt. And the last pitch was a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Probably seemed like a 100-mile-an-hour pitch, and it was high and upstairs. Now, the right-hander matched a season high by going 8 innings and giving up 8 hits, 1 walk, 1 unearned run, and he struck out at 8. He lowered his season ERA to 3.39. In the fifth inning, Lindor hit a ball to deep center field that appeared to be heading over the wall, but Albert Almora Jr., who entered the game, made a leaping catch and robbed him of a home run. Getting the start against a team that traded him, Tyler Naquin delivered a 2-out, 2-run triple in the eighth inning that just missed being a home run and gave the Mets some breathing room, 5-1. Adam Ottavino came in the ninth inning and, despite some traffic on the bases, got the final 3 outs to give the Mets their 4th straight win. So yes, indeed, it was a great, great day at Citi Field. Now, the Mets and the Reds continue their 3-game series on Tuesday night with the first pitch scheduled at 7 p.m. It'll be right-hander pitcher Carlos Carrasco going against Mike Minor, who had a pretty good year last year. Lefty going for Cincinnati. So we'll want to check that one out and continue to see if the Met magic continues. Now here are some of the audio highlights from last night's game.
And Marte launches one to deep left center, taking a look as Frehley, but that ball is way out of here. Starling Marte, 12th home run of the year, and 2 batters in, the Mets have a 2-0 lead.
Marte has really been remarkable in the first inning. Half of his 12 home runs have come in the first inning.
That's lined and into right field, a base hit. Around third, Lindor heading home. The throw by Aquino, strong arm but offline. And Lindor scores on the base hit by Vogelbach to make it 3-0 New York. Back to the mound, Bassitt goes to second for one, Lindor to first, double play, side retired. 1-6-3 double play, second one turned for the Mets. Lindor unloads one to center field, back goes Almora to the warning track, at the wall, he made the catch! Oh wow, Almora with a great play, takes a home run away from Lindor. Oh wow. Strikeout for Bassitt, and he leaves after 8 terrific innings.
Canna at second, McNeil at first with 2 down. And Naquin hits one of the air to right field. Aquino back to the warning track. Right back at the wall, he can't get it. 2 runs are going to score.
Naquin around second, he's going to go to third. A 2-run triple for Tyler Naquin, and it's 5-1 New York.
2-2 from Ottavino.
He struck him out, and the ball game is over. Adam Ottavino puts on the finishing touches, securing it for Chris Bassett, who was a master of extrication tonight.
And there you have it, the audio highlights from yet another big Met win. And this team is as hot as the weather has been in August. And isn't that a fun thing to say? This could definitely be the year. This could be the year. And how about Chris Bassett? Oh my God, with Scherzer and DeGrom back. And then Starling Marte hitting that home run yesterday. And then all the pitching going well. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, coming off a grueling five-game series against the Braves, the Mets didn't have a letdown game at all last night with the 5-1 victory. And while it wasn't an offensive explosion or a dominant performance from Max Scherzer or Jacob DeGrom, it came off the strength of Chris Bassett's arm and ability to go long in games. With the Mets playing their 12th game in 11 days, manager Buck Showalter and the team were looking for a reprieve for the bullpen before their next scheduled day off this Thursday. And that's exactly what Bassett gave them. Everybody's role is different on this team, and Bassett's role is to eat innings, not to punch guys out. Eat innings, and that's what he's been doing. He's been in a rested manner after the off day, and say it was a big step, Buck Walter said, to give Bassett what they need out there. It was a big team outing for a pitching staff. Now, he threw 114 pitches over 8 innings to give the bullpen a much-needed day off, aside from the one inning Adam Ottavino pitched. It's the 9th consecutive start Bassett has pitched in at least 6 innings. After this latest start, Bassett now has the 5 highest pitch counts by a Met pitcher this season. That ability to go long, even when he's grinding it out, is one reason for why the 33-year-old believes the Mets traded for him in the offseason. Because he's done it for years, and that's why they brought him there. He's the type of guy that there's no hesitation when he goes over 100 innings. And stuff doesn't really decline that much once it does reach 100 pitches. So he has the ability to go long and pitch well. And he's a hard worker. He doesn't slack off. And he's a true professional and a gamer. He's a little bit like Max Scherzer out there. And with the trust he and the coaching staff have built this season, Showalter is squeezing one more inning of a starter every time he goes out there. He is just too competitive. And he doesn't let anyone dictate how he feels. He's got a good head and a good feel, and it's hard to quantify. He likes to compete and does what's expected of him. Showalter confirmed after the game that 3 relievers, including closer Edwin Diaz, were unavailable Monday. So Bassett's performance meant even more in the grand scheme this week. And while Showalter appreciates the effort, he was quick to say that the bullpen situation does not dictate how far they are willing to push Bassett, as his health is paramount, something that the right-hander confirms. And Bassett's the type of guy that wants to go the limit. He'll go his 115-20 pitches every start. In his last 7 starts now, Bassett has a 2.28 ERA, all while pitching at least 6 innings in each. He'll get an extra day off before his next scheduled start. And after the performance he had Monday, and frankly the last month, he deserves it. He really does. He has been the ultimate workhorse. And now we're going to listen to what Chris Bassett had to say about his performance.
Just being in the zone. I mean, I'm not sure how many strikes I've thrown, but just being in the zone.
When you're in a situation where maybe the manager would like to not use the bullpen much, do you go into, I mean, you were very economic at the beginning of the game. Are you thinking about the length going into it?
Yeah, I think everyone's role is basically different. In the aspect of kind of what they do, and my job's always that, to eat innings. It's not punch guys out or anything like that. It's just to eat innings. So not a different game plan today, but yeah, just eat innings.
What was that last out, like Jeremy came out there, was that a matter of emptying the tank? You know, those were your last batter, and what's it feel like to get him on 3 pitches to end the night like that?
Yeah, it was we threw a lot of sinkers inside to him, and it was, do you want to go to the well again one more time, or kind of change it up? So two or three batters before that, I threw a really good cutter down and away, so I was like, I'm just going to try that first. I think it's going to be a swing and miss. If he tries that, he's going to be protecting inside, and then go back to it. So That was pretty much it.
Buck has extended you, not just tonight, but in other starts this season in ways that he really hasn't most other pitchers. How much pride do you take in just the fact that he has that trust in you to do it?
I've done that for years, and Bo Mel did that with me in Oakland, and I think genuinely that's why they brought me over here, was just for that reason. I'm not afraid to go over 100 pitches, and it really doesn't affect me. So, yeah, I'm confident going past 100. I don't think my stuff declines. So, yeah, I'm fine with that.
How are you able to hold your stuff for 114 pitches?
Work your butt off. That's it. I mean, just don't slack in between starts, and just conditioning wise, make sure you're ready to go. I mean, I want to go 115, 120 pitches every start, but Buck don't let me. So,
what is the most you would feel comfortable throwing in a game?
I mean, the game dictates that. I mean, to be honest with you, so like, if it's a lot of stressful innings, then yeah, like the pitches kind of matter a little bit more. So 100 may feel like 130, but sometimes 130 feels like 90. So it all depends on the game.
How cognizant are you coming in that, you know, the bullpen's gotten a lot of work lately with all the games, and if you can go deeper, you really...
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, my mindset hasn't changed from any outing. I try to go 9 every time. I'm not trying to strike anybody out, really, for the most part. It's more so just kind of give the bullpen a day off, and that's basically it. I mean, that's what I've tried to do the last couple of years, and it seemed to work.
How does your kind of repertoire allow you to work through 3 or 4 times through a lineup, just having the number of pitches that you do?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a big factor of I could go 3 pitches at you, 1 or 2 at bats, and then I can go 3 different pitches at you the next 2 at bats or whatever it may be. So, yeah, it makes it easy on me.
With the stressful innings there in the middle, did the 114 feel like 114 tonight, or did it feel like...
No, I feel good. I feel really good. And that was the reason I came out. I mean, I've always told Buck, and I've told everyone in the past that I'll be completely honest with you. If I'm done at 100, I'll tell you I'm done at 100. But I told him I was good to go, so he let me go.
You're frustrated.
Appreciation from Buck that he allows you to go this far this often?
Yes, I take a lot of pride in it, and him kind of giving me that nod of approval definitely makes it a lot easier to kind of work your butt off in between starts. I'll say that.
There's a few starts now recently where a lot of soft contact has resulted in hits. I mean, how do you kind of get over? I'm sure it's frustrating when you're out there, but how do you kind of just...
It's part of it. I mean, honestly, it means I'm doing things right. If I'm getting soft contact, it means I'm doing things right. But hard contact, like a lot of balls are like mastocases. I'm searching. So weak contact don't bother me.
And there you have it, Chris Bassett. What an addition he was. And now that we're more than halfway through the season, reaching almost the three-quarters point, we can see what the Mets saw in Chris Bassett, starring Marte, Eduardo Escobar. What an off-season by the Met front office staff acquiring the talent. They went and got the right players for the right positions, and it is just beautiful to see. Now let's go back and visit that Atlanta Braves series, shall we? The Mets took 4 out of 5 games from the Braves from Thursday to Sunday, and that was probably the Mets' biggest regular season series in about 7 years, and the Mets just didn't beat the Braves. They dismantled them. The exception during the 5-game, 4-day series was Friday night when Taijuan Walker just didn't have his stuff, and the Mets fell behind an early 8-0 hole. But even in that one, the Mets fought back to make it 8-5, causing the Braves to burn some of their best relievers. The other 4 games went like this. Thursday, the Mets won 6-4. Saturday, Game 1, the Mets won 8-5. Saturday, Game 2, the Mets won 6-2. Sunday, Game 5, the Mets won... Game 5 of the series, let's just say the Mets won 5-2. And the 4 wins weren't exactly that close, with Game 1 of Saturday's doubleheader getting hairy early in the 9th, because the Mets at first entrusted it to Yoan Lopez. Now, the Mets were not only the better team against the Braves, they were the tighter team. They put the ball in play a ton, as the Braves flailed and missed a lot. And that is the difference between these two teams. The Mets put the ball in play, and the Braves go for the long ball, 3-run, and hope for the best type of approach. Now, offensively, the Mets got a ton from Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor, who both stayed red hot. while also getting contributions from newcomers like Daniel Vogelbach, Tyler Naquin, and Darren Ruff, and pretty much everybody else. Defensively, the Mets were close to flawless, making just one error to Atlanta's five. And the Mets also played heady defense, including Luis Guillorme's frozen rope from second base to cut down a runner at the plate on Saturday. On the mound, with the exception of Walker's tough start, Mets starting pitchers were terrific, with Carlos Carrasco 6 innings, 3 runs, David Peterson 5.1 scoreless innings in a spot start, and Max Scherzer 7 scoreless innings, and Jacob deGrom 5.2 perfect innings before a late hiccup dominating. Mets relievers were also strong during the series, of course, highlighted by Edwin Diaz, who notched 3 saves, including the first 6-out save of his career, while allowing 1 hit, walking none, and striking out 7 in 3 2/3 innings. As Diaz put the finishing touches on Sunday's win, the Braves' top of the order literally could not touch him as Dansby Swanson, Matt Olson, and Austin Riley struck out in succession. The Mets, some question in the bullpen notwithstanding, are starting to look like a well-oiled machine that could be an absolute bulldozer in the postseason. And in the postseason, what could make opposing teams quiver the most is the presence of DeGrom and Scherzer atop the rotation. There was Scherzer on Saturday night shouldering the load of a Game 2 doubleheader, as he always does, ultimately stalking around the mound and blowing the Braves away with dastardly sliders and pinpoint fastballs. Then came DeGrom, who on Sunday made his first start at Citi Field in over a year. And how about that crowd at Citi Field? Though it was absolutely baking during a relentless heat wave, they welcomed DeGrom like a returning hero with ovations as he walked out to the bullpen to warm up, then walked back in before the top of the first. And while most people expected DeGrom to be DeGrom upon his return, it was still downright outrageous to see him do what he did on Sunday as he retired the first 17 Braves he faced. The first inning, DeGrom fired a 102-mile-per-hour fastball and a 96-mile-per-hour fastball. Of the first 18 sliders he threw, the Braves swung and missed at all of them. The perfection ended with 2 outs in the fifth as DeGrom, who was still stretching out, was reaching the end of his start anyway. But what an absolute jaw-dropping show it was. Throughout the weekend, as the Mets staked their claim as not only the team to beat in the NL East, perhaps the team to beat in all of baseball, Citi Field was a cauldron of emotion and noise with fans who have been waiting for years for a reason to erupt during so any chance they got. From the moment the trumpet sounded and Diaz trotted in for the top of the ninth on Sunday to the moment he struck out Riley to end it, no one sat down. For Met fans too young to remember 86 or who weren't born yet in 86, this could be their 86. Nothing is guaranteed, but the Mets are set up incredibly well to not only win the NL East, but be in position to win the whole thing once the playoffs start. The Mets have to get to the postseason first. What appears to be a soft schedule in September could help them get there in strong shape. The Mets want to win their first World Series since 86. They'll have to take down the formidable foes along the way, including the Dodgers maybe, the Padres, and either the Yankees or the Astros. But it's honestly difficult to see a team more equipped to win it all than this Met team. If the versions of DeGrom and Scherzer showed up over the weekend against the Braves are staring down their opposing hitters in the playoffs, they are that good. But it's still a long way off. It's still August. A lot can happen, as we can see. We were writing the Mets off a month ago. But right now, things are looking good. They really are looking good. And Cincinnati is the perfect thing to keep it going. Like I said, the Met offense is clicking. We saw Justin Dunn against his former team. And he was traded along with Jared Kelenic and others to the Mariners in a deal that brought Robbie Cano. And now that's going to be called the Edwin Diaz trade. Dunn was solid for the Mariners in parts of 3 seasons, 3.94 ERA and 1.35 whip with 92 strikeouts and 102 innings over 25 starts. But he's dealt with shoulder injuries since last season, and he wasn't the cure for the Reds on Monday. And he got the start because Hunter Green, the guy who can throw 100 miles an hour and then give up a tater that goes 500 feet, jokingly 500 feet, got the start because of that. But the Reds just can't score. The Reds have scored 460 runs this season, which puts them near the bottom of the NL, and that's with their stats being inflated by playing home games in Great American Ballpark. The Reds are hitting .254, .327, .421, with 67 homers in 56 games, but just .223, .288, .334, with 36 homers in 51 games. So the Mets feasted yesterday, and hopefully they can keep on feasting against the Reds. That would be nice to see. And the future is looking so bright. And I know some people wanted to see Juan Soto is a Met, but the Met prospects, they now have four prospects on the Baseball America's updated 100 prospect list. On the list are catcher Francisco Alvarez, number 6, third baseman Brett Beatty, number 28, catcher Kevin Parada, and he's already number 53, and center fielder Alex Ramirez, number 94. And ESPN's updated farm system rankings have the Mets at number 5 in the Major League Baseball world. Alvarez has been on a power tear recently after taking some time to adjust to Triple-A Syracuse and could be an option to be called up later this season. Beatty was promoted to Syracuse on Monday after dominating Double-A Binghamton when he was named Player of the Month for July. Parada, the Mets' first pick in the 2022 MLB draft, has not yet made his professional debut. Ramirez had a breakout season in 2022 for A-ball St. Lucie and high A-ball Brooklyn, slashing 280, 352, 456 with 11 homers, 19 doubles, and 7 triples in 93 games as a 19-year-old. In addition to the four players, the Mets have some others, including Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio, who have made various others top 100 lists this season. And New York has a handful of prospects who could soon be on top 100 lists, including recently drafted Jet Williams, 2021 draft pick Calvin Zegor, and Matt Allen, who has been working his way back from injury. So we'll have to see what happens there. But everything is looking good, not only presently, but going into the future. So it's very good to be a Met fan these days. Now let's talk a little bit about Mark Hanha, shall we? He spent 2 years playing every day for Oakland and began the season with the same kind of work schedule for the Mets. But now he's a semi-regular following the emergence of left-handed bats in the lineup, including Tyler Naquin's trade deadline of arrival. And the veteran outfielder is trying to produce when his turn arrives. He was absent Monday's starting lineup, a day after delivering a two-run double against the Braves. He's getting kind of used to it, but he's the type of guy that wants to play in the big leagues and play winning ball while in the big leagues. And the way the schedule's constructed, very few players are going to play 162 games. So I think when Kanha gets the days off, it helps his body a lot. And it makes him even more effective when he's in there. Now, he arrived on a 2-year contract worth $26.5 million. And he has been professional. He's a winning player. And he's just been solid since the day he got to Port St. Lucie. He is a very articulate, smart guy who understands the end game and wants to win. And you can't underestimate what a guy like Hanha does. He's a get-after-it guy. And I love him. I love him. Another guy I love, from the limited times I've seen him on highlights, is Brett Beatty. Now, he was their first-round pick in the 2019 draft, and he's now at Syracuse. And he owned a .312/.406/.544 slash line with 19 homers and 59 ribbies in 89 games for Double-A Binghamton. He joins the organization's top prospect, Francisco Alvarez, at Syracuse. Now, how about the pomp and circumstance of Edwin Diaz? Well, it even caught Buck Showalter, and he had to stop and watch it the other day. Showalter said, "I'm going to stay here and watch this. I don't care how you feel about all that stuff. This is pretty good." So he stayed there and watched the intro to his customary narco, Diaz's customary narco, with horns blaring. And how about this? Sunday's SNY broadcast was the second most watched in history of the network. The broadcast drew 555,000 viewers, according to the network. Only the Mets' final regular season game in 2008, which drew 806,447 viewers, was more watched. The series against the Braves averaged 462,000 viewers, an SNY record. So yes, the Mets are the talk of the town, and people are watching. Now it's time to talk about the Facebook group that complements this podcast, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. If you're not a member and are on Facebook, check us out with New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. Great content that complements this broadcast every day. If you're not subscribed to this podcast, please do subscribe. We try to upload one every day for you. We try to do a podcast, like I say, every day, so check us out. We're your one-stop shopping on Facebook and as far as podcasts are concerned. And as we do every day, here are our trivia and Jeopardy questions of the day. Today's trivia question is, what Met player is the franchise leader with 4 30-home run seasons? And today's final Mets Jeopardy is, First Jeopardy is was called up to the major leagues for the first time on August 26, 2017, when fellow outfielder Yoenis Cespedes landed on the DL. On September 27, he hit a ninth-inning walk-off single against A.J. Minter, the Atlanta Braves at Citi Field, and he elected free agency on November 6, 2017. Lock in your answers, and we'll be back at the end of the podcast to tell you how you did. Now it's time to look at this day in Met history. We celebrate three birthdays today. The first one is Tommy Agee. Yes, the center fielder that roamed the green pastures at Shea in 1969 was born this day in 1942. And happy birthday to Pat Mahomes. Yes, the father of Pat Mahomes, the football player. He was a Met, and he was born in 1970, Mr. Pat Mahomes Sr. And happy birthday to former Met coach Steve Swisher, who coached us from 1994, coached for us from 1994 to 1996. And on this date in 2017, the Mets traded Jay Bruce, who just didn't work out at the time, to the Cleveland Indians for Ryder Ryan. And on this date in 2019, the Mets signed local boy Joe Panic. Remember when Joe was a Met? Well, those are your Met transactions and birthdays for this day. And let's talk about what's going on in the group, shall we? Today we posted the standings of the NL East. And a little summary, the Mets are now 7 games up on the Braves and 10 games up on the Phillies.
You're well aware, listen.
And there's an article from the New York Post posted by Richard Rose about Daniel Vogelbach, how he has become a folk hero. And it tells all about his family motivation and his wild baseball journey. And he's become a fan favorite. Check out that article. It's in the group site. And Ben Verlander came out and said it. Ben, Justin's brother, who has a big presence on social media, he came out and said the Mets are the best team in New York. And then we put a little comic up there. When you hear the trumpets, it is already too late. And isn't that the truth? Like I said, there's good stuff every day. Anthony Rivera gave us a link to his Subway to Shea podcast. Mike Fried, as always, gives up his daily summaries, and he is spot on all the time. Good analysis from Mike every day. So check us out. We're on Facebook, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life, and those are some of the things you'll be reading about when you go there. But good stuff as always. And now, for those who have waited patiently, we're going to go back and give you the Met Trivia and Jeopardy Question of the Day results. Who's ready? Okay, let's do it. The trivia question is, what Met player is the franchise leader with 430 home run seasons? Well, the correct answer is old number 31 himself, Mike Piazza. Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct answer. The second Jeopardy is two clues. First clue was called up to the major leagues for the first time on August 26, 2017, when fellow outfielder Yoenis Cespedes landed on the DL. Second clue was on September 27th. He hit a ninth-inning walk-off single against A.J. Minter of the Atlanta Braves at Citi Field, and he elected free agency on November 6, 2017. Well, the correct answer to that one is, who is Travis Tyone? And congratulations to John Tierney on being the correct response, the first correct responder to that one also. John sweeps the board, and he's done that quite often this year. So let's talk about tonight's game one more time before we sign off. Check it out tonight. It's on SNY. Game time is at 7:10. Going for the Reds, Mike Minor, who is a pretty good pitcher but having a horrible year. He's 1-8 with a 6.19 ERA. And he'll be going against Cookie Carrasco. Hard to believe Cookie has 12 wins already. He has a 12-4 record with a 3.82 ERA. Let's hope the Mets keep on rolling. Let's go, Mets, and let's see how we do tonight against the Reds. Tomorrow's the series finale. It's a day game. So there'll be night game and wake up tomorrow for the final, and then they have a day off Thursday. And then the Phillies come to town. Well, check us out here at the podcast, and we'll be talking all about it. Once again, I want to thank you all for your support. It means the world to me. And we'll talk soon. Enjoy the hot, hot day. I think this is going to be the hottest day we'll have for the rest of the summer. So stay cool, but let's hope the Mets stay hot. Talk to you soon. Let's go, Mets.
Meet the Mets. greet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball. Streets. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! Oh, they're hollering and cheering and they're jumping in their seats. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! All the fans are true to the orange and blue. So hurry up and come on down, 'cause we got ourselves a ball from the Mets of New York town. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are ready.